We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
What's called woke culture and what's called innocence signaling, it's actually virtue signaling. There's an attempt to show the world that I'm pure.
Social justice is not compatible with a biblical commitment. CRT, critical race theory, is not compatible with a biblical commitment at all. And neither is liberation theology.
And Jesus invites us, come on and be Lazarus now. Don't worry about it. I've got the end covered. You need to worry about not being the rich man now. And remember, the mark of the rich man was he despised the words. He would not listen to them.
Topics you can really sink your teeth into. That's why Iowa dentists love Issues Etc.
We talk a lot about the nuns here on Issues Etc., the religiously unaffiliated. So when you hear that, what and who do you picture? Do you picture someone who is highly educated, leaning toward what, atheism or agnosticism? Turns out that the nuns, well, some of them are atheist and agnostic, but not very many of them. And it turns out that they're not even non-religious. They're just non-affiliated. And they are one quarter of the U.S. population and still growing. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 1st of April. We're going to be talking about the religiously unaffiliated in America with Dr. Ryan Burge, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Eastern Illinois University and author of the book, The Nuns, Where They Came From, Who They Are, and Where They're Going. A little bit later, Mary Eberstadt joins us. She has written an open letter to President Biden on the Equality Act. We'll find out why. And then Dr. Nancy Almodovar joins us. She's author of the new book, Creedal Apologetics. We'll talk about using the Apostles' Creed to defend and proclaim the Christian faith. Joining us to discuss the religiously unaffiliated in America, Dr. Ryan Burge. He's Assistant Professor of Political Science and Graduate Coordinator at Eastern Illinois University and author of the new book, The Nuns, Where They Came From, Who They Are, and Where They Are Going. Dr. Burge, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much for having me.
As a political scientist, does it surprise you that the religiously unaffiliated are now one quarter of the U.S. population?
Well, in some ways, yes, but in some ways, no, right? I think in some ways, I'm really surprised that it's not larger or it hasn't happened faster. You know, we always take our cues from what happens in Europe. It seems like culture kind of starts there and then migrates across the ocean to us. And you know, especially in Western Europe, places like Spain, Germany, France, the U.K., we're seeing, you know, church attendance rates are in the single digits in some of those places. And 20% of people, even in a country like Italy, go to church once a week. So to think that we were not going to, you know, we were going to be spared from the secularization that was going all over Europe is just, you know, sort of wishful thinking. So in some ways, I'm actually surprised it's not higher than it is right now.
Does this rapid growth of a particular religious category, does it have a precedent in U.S. history?
Not really. Well, the issue with this is, you know, religious demography as an idea is a pretty new concept. We really don't have a lot of great data that goes back before the early 1970s. The survey that I use predominantly in the book is called the General Social Survey, and it was started in 1972. But before that, we really don't have any publicly available religion data that goes back much before the 1950s or 1940s. So, you know, I constantly get asked by people, what was America's religious composition like 100 years ago or 200 years ago? years ago? And the answer to that question is all we have are semi-educated guesses, not even really good guesses. So it's hard to know if what we're seeing here is sort of like an overcorrection or really we're seeing a trend that we've never seen before. It does seem like, though, that we've never had the amount of religious disaffiliation as we've had right now in America.
What and who, for some context, are the seven religious categories?
Yeah, so we think about religion, we divide them up into these seven groups. It's evangelical Protestants, mainline Protestants, black Protestants, then Catholics, Jews, people of other faith. So that's like a grab bag of everyone else, you know, Mormons, Buddhists, Hindus, Wiccans, Jedis, kind of all fall in that category. And then the last category is obviously the one that I focus on in the book, which is people who have no religious affiliation. Those are sort of the way we track American religion using those seven categories.
So what does religiously unaffiliated actually mean?
Yeah, so for me, I have a really simple definition. I don't try to overcomplicate it. It's if we ask you on a survey, what's your present religion, if any, if you check the box next to no religion, then you are a nun in my world. I'm not focused too much on religious belief or religious behavior, you know, things like church attendance. To me, as a social scientist, the most important thing that we can really think about is who are you in social space? You know, who are your people? Who do you throw in with on issues of politics and culture and society? And by saying that you have no religion, you're actually making a pretty interesting argument about who are your people. So when people say they have no religion, to me, that's what makes you a nun, not what you believe or what you how you go to church or where when you go to church. But if you say you have no religion, and that's, to me, that's the most important thing.
So does that mean that the nuns are non-religious?
No. And I think that's really, really crucial to understand about American religion is that most nuns are sums. You know, we talked about, you know, the three dimensions of religiosity. We call them the three Bs: behavior, belief, and belonging. Belonging is I don't claim a religious affiliation. I say I'm a nun on a survey. But what we know is that 90% of Americans today still say that they have a belief in God. Only about 10 or 11% of Americans in 2018 espouse an atheistic or agnostic view of the world. So if a quarter of Americans are nuns by affiliation, but only 10% of Americans are nuns by belief, it lets you know that a lot of Americans say they're nuns, but still believe in God. So, you know, America is still stubbornly religious from a psychological sense, if not from a sociological sense.
According to the latest data, how many nuns are there in the U.S.?
You know, that's a question that you would think would be an easy answer, but it's actually incredibly difficult to answer because how you ask the question has a direct impact on how people answer the question. So the one I was just telling you about, the General Social Survey says it's about 23.5% of Americans claim no religion. But in other surveys, like the Cooperative Congressional Election Study, which is what I use a lot as well, it's closer to 30% or maybe even higher than 30%. And the reason for that is twofold. One is the General Social Survey is done, or at least was done face-to-face for the last 46 years, which means you actually have to look someone in the eye and tell them that you have no religious affiliation. And for a lot of people, that is not something they want to admit to someone else in a room. That's called social desirability bias. However, the CCES, Cooperative Congressional Election Study, is done online. And what we know online is people are more honest about what they really believe. So, you know, we think that actually drives up the answers in terms of more nuns show up in these online surveys. The other issue is the CCES gives you more options. It lets you say that you're atheist, agnostic, or a group called nothing in particular. And giving people more options to be a nun means they're more likely to pick a nun. So now they're probably about 30% in the CCES, which I think is actually a more accurate number.
What are some of the cultural, political, and demographic changes over the last four decades that shed some light on the growth of the nuns?
Well, you know, as in most things in the social world, it's complicated, and I'm thankful for that because that keeps me in a job. But, you know, there's many factors that led America to disaffiliate. In secularization, the one I just talked about is one of those areas, that just the idea as a country becomes more educated and more economically prosperous, it's just going to become more religiously unaffiliated. And sociologists have been talking about this for literally hundreds of years now. So we were going to expect the nuns to rise in America, but it does seem there are several other factors in America that have sort of accelerated this trend. One is politics. we know that liberals are more likely to be religiously unaffiliated in America. For instance, in 2018, 40% of people who are liberal say they have no religious affiliation. It's only about 12% of people who identify as conservative. So obviously, there's a political dimension to this whole thing, but there's other things too. For instance, things like the internet. It made it easier in the last 20 or 30 years. If you were an atheist, let's say in rural Alabama in 1955, you might never tell another soul in person that you did not believe in God, because that would, you know, ostracize you from that local community. But if that same young person in 2005 was an atheist, they could Google, you know, the atheists of Alabama and find a whole group, a whole community of people you could join together with. And so it probably made it easier to be what you really were, you know, in the last 20 years, because the internet allows you to find like-minded folks, and that gives you sort of permission to be what you actually are. So I think the internet had something to do with it, but I also think things like the breakdown of the nuclear family has a lot to do with it. For instance, we know that people who are not married go to church less. People who don't have children don't go to church less. And we know that marriage rates and the number of families who are child-free or have no children has risen in the last couple of years, especially amongst younger people. So all those things kind of come together as a confluence of events that have accelerated the rise of the unaffiliated.
So you had mentioned a little bit of this a few minutes ago, but what is social desirability bias and how may it help explain the growth of the nuns?
Yeah, so this is a fancy pants sociological term for people who do survey research, where it's the idea that when we ask you a question on a survey, you have a tendency to lie if the topic is something that's sensitive. For instance, if we ask you about sexual activity, or drug use, or things like views of racism or sexism, we know that people are going to say the answer they want us to hear, not what they actually believe. So, you know, how many sexual partners have you had? If you actually had five, you might actually only say one or two because you don't want to look bad in the eyes of the person asking you the question. And we know that social desirability bias is actually very acute when we ask questions about religion. Despite the fact that nuns have risen so dramatically in the last 20 or 30 years, America is still a religious country by default. And so people want to appear more religious on surveys. So what we know is that people were essentially lying about how much they went to church, what their religious affiliation was. And so maybe what's happened over the last 20 or 30 years is we've actually not seen a real change in behavior or belonging, but instead what we've really just seen a change is, and people are being more honest on these surveys now and telling us the truth. So there's actually a theory out there that maybe the nuns haven't risen at all. They've just sort of emerged or become more prominent because they actually are telling the truth about who they are on surveys. You know, like we talked about, online surveys do a better job of kind of getting around social desirability bias, but it's impossible to fully bypass it because human beings, you know, we just have a tendency to lie about things that we, you know, are not proud of.
Why do you say that political changes are the leading explanation for the rapid rate of religious disaffiliation?
Yeah. So if you look at the graphs and you look at when the nuns, so the nuns were around 5% in 1972, and they just barely edged up to about 7% in 20 years, which is really nothing in terms of religious demography. 2% in 20 years is not much to write home about. But then right around the early 1990s, the graph looks kind of like a hockey stick where it was sort of flat at the bottom and then boom, it hits this curve in the early 1990s and just shoots up and to the right. And really, we know that was an interesting confluence of events in American political history. For instance, abortion became a national issue at that moment. The Summer of Mercy happened in 1990, where there were these widespread nationwide protests against abortion clinics. There were pickets outside abortion providers. There were murders of abortion doctors. There were bombings of abortion clinics all at this time. At the same time, the early 1990s also brought about really the rise of the religious right. You know, the Contract with America happened in 1994 with Newt Gingrich, which really kind of pushed this country. And Newt Gingrich was a different kind of Republican, a one who was controversial and wanted to create tension and wanted to drive wedges amongst groups of people. So that sort of pushed people to the right. At the same time, evangelicalism hit its peak in America in 1993. Almost 30% of Americans were evangelical in 1993. Today, it's about 22%. So maybe this rise in evangelicalism actually pushed out a lot of moderate Christians away from the ranks of Protestant Christianity and push them to be a nun. You add in the things like televangelism with Jim Baker and Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, you know, these prominent names who are very far to the right and very controversial. That really drove out a lot of moderate Christians and put them in the ranks of the nuns.
What role has the loss of trust in American institutions played?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest overarching stories in American social science right now, is the idea that Americans just do not trust anybody. Especially, they don't trust institutions that are far away from them. And that goes back to Watergate. You know, we know before Watergate, America had a reasonable amount of trust in its government to do the right thing most of the time. But after Watergate, it seems like the lid was off and the media was after politicians, institutions. You know, investigative journalism really, you know, started in the early 1970s. And that's when we started seeing these corporations were not doing the right thing. And then add to that, you know, the Catholic Church abuse scandal, which really broke not too long ago. About 20 years ago, the Boston Globe published a series of stories about Catholic priests abusing boys. And so all these things sort of created this confluence of events where America stopped trusting anybody who was sort of away from them, further away from them. What we do see, what's interesting is that Americans still trust people who are close to them. This is why you see, in, for instance, in polling data, that Americans generally don't like Congress, but they really like their congressperson. You know, the same thing with churches. Most people don't like their denomination because it's somewhere else, but they like their pastor because they know their pastor. So what really trust has done is shifted from a more global sense of trust to a more local sense of trust. And when that happens, when all these scandals happen, let's say with televangelism, with Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and all those, and Joel Osteen and all the, you know, controversies he's been involved with, prosperity gospel preaching, people use that as kind of examples of why they don't want to be part of churches anymore. So, you know, trust is hurting all institutions in America, and religious institutions have not been spared by that.
Dr. Ryan Burge is our guest. He's assistant professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University and author of the new book, The Nuns, Where They Came From, Who They Are, and Where They Are Going. We'll be right back and talk about the family.
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. simplyclassical.com.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Today is the final day to take advantage of the early bird registration fee of $135 for the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. You can register online at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago. We're talking about the religiously unaffiliated in America with Dr. Ryan Burge. Dr. Burge, what about changes in family structure? Has that contributed to the increase in the nuns?
Yeah, we know that church is seen as sort of a traditional institution in the lives of Americans. And so people, you know, sort of used to follow this very linear track of how they live their lives. You know, they turned 18, they went away to college, they got a degree, they got a job somewhere. Usually they got married somewhere in their mid-20s. They had kids by their late 20s, a couple kids, you know, they were done having kids by their early 30s to mid-30s. And then they were getting back into church at that point because they wanted their children to have the same upbringing that they had in a religious institution. But what's changed about all that is, one, hardly anyone follows that track anymore. We know that people are delaying marriage more and more. We know that people are delaying childbearing more and more, and many people are voluntarily not having children for a variety of reasons. So that is, you know, not getting us back in that sort of traditional track. But the other thing that's happening is that more and more people now are being raised in secular households. That was not the norm. When only 5% of Americans were nuns in 1972, hardly anyone grew up in a secular household. Now we're talking about 25, 30% of all children in America are being raised in households without religion at all. So they're not getting that dose of religion as a young person that will sort of tie them to religion for the rest of their lives. So we're seeing this whole new phenomenon, which is second generation nuns and third generation nuns, which is something that we don't even fully understand yet because it's such a new phenomenon.
So let's dig in a little bit. Who are the nuns? What subgroups make up this category?
Yeah, so it's three different groups of people. There are atheists, which obviously atheists are people who don't believe in God. They are 6% of the population. They are incredibly liberal politically. They're the most liberal religious group in America today. 80% of them voted for Joe Biden in 2020. They are male dominated, 60% are male. They have very high education. 45% of them have a bachelor's degree or more. They're one of the most educated religious groups in America today. And their incomes are high, reflecting that education. So they're 6% of America. Right behind them are agnostics. They're also 6% of America. And I like to think of agnostics as sort of just a lighter version of atheists, a little bit lower education, a little bit lower income. They're a little bit more gender balanced. It's about 55% male. They're also liberal, but not quite as liberal as the atheists. But then the big group, which is the group that no one really talks about, are this group called Nothing in Particular, which is actually the response option that you're given on the survey. You're given 11 different options, and the last, it goes atheists, agnostic, and then the last one is nothing in particular. They are today about 21% of the population, which puts them right in line with evangelicals and Catholics in terms of the largest religious group in America today. They've grown 7%. They were 14% in 2008, and they're 21% today. Fastest growing religious group in America. They have very low education. Only 19% of them have a four-year college degree. So they're dramatically different than atheists, let's say on that. Their incomes are below average. They are not politically engaged at all. I mean, they're the least politically engaged religious group. And politically, they're also in the very middle of the spectrum. They're not, you would not define them as liberal. They're slightly left of center, but not, you know, much more central to the, you know, the political landscape than atheists or agnostics are. I think, unfortunately, when people think about the nuns, they only think about the atheists and the agnostics, when the reality is that most nuns are neither atheist nor agnostic. They're this group called Nothing in Particular. And we need to spend some more time thinking about this group going forward.
What religious affiliation is producing the most nuns?
So mainline Protestants are people like United Methodists, Episcopalians, United Church of Christ. Our more liberal denominations are called mainline Protestants. In 1976, they were 30% of America. They were the largest religious group in America at the time. So today, mainline Protestants are about 10%. Of America. And the downward trajectory there is pretty staggering. I've projected this out, and they look like they might only be 5% of America by 2030. So they have gone from 30% to 5%, you know, over a span of about 40 years. And many of them, but not all of them, but a huge chunk of them went and became religiously unaffiliated. We also know that a lot of mainlines also became evangelicals too. But if you look at the movement in the American religious landscape, it's a lot more turbulent than people think it is. People bounce bounce around from denominations. People go in and out of traditions over time. But it does seem like a lot of the mainline Protestants over time did become religiously unaffiliated, but also the nuns have grown just through generational replacement, which means that older people who are religious died off, and they were then replaced by younger people who were religiously unaffiliated. That's actually one of the primary drivers of the growth of the nuns, is just generational replacement.
What does the increase in the median age of the nuns mean for Christian congregations?
Yeah. So the thing about the nuns is, I think most people, like, and they conceptualize the nuns, they think about it like a young tech bro atheist who's, you know, 28 years old and makes $150,000 a year with a graduate degree. The reality is, when a group becomes as large as the nuns are now, like we talked about 30% of America, they start looking more and more like America every day. So what we know is the average age of the nuns has climbed as the average age of America has climbed. Now, they're still a lot younger, let's say, than evangelicals, or especially mainline congregations are getting very old. Many mainline congregations, like the Episcopal Church, for instance, the average age there is around 60 years old. For the nuns, it's in the early 40s. So there's a huge gap there, but the nuns are getting older, and we're seeing a larger share of older nuns now, because a lot of these people became nuns when they were in their 20s. Back in the 1970s and 80s, and they've just carried that through. So, you know, the thing about age is that the nuns are not a cohesive group. When they were only 5% of the population, it was pretty easy to be cohesive about politics, about race, about gender, about everything. But as they got larger, they become more sort of heterogeneous, more amorphous, more diverse. And I think that makes it even harder to conceptualize what they are, because they are everything and they are everyone. Every community has nuns in it. It's men, it's women, it's old, it's young, it's black, it's white, it's Asian, Hispanic. It's every part of society now are nuns, when that was really not the case 40 years ago. It was largely a white, college-educated phenomenon, and now it's just everybody.
So it sounds like they're a cross-section. What do we know about them in terms of gender and race?
Yeah, so gender-wise, we just talk about atheists are 60% male. They're very male-dominated. And if you go on Amazon, let's say, and like look at the atheist book section of Amazon.com, I did that. In the top 25 books, best-selling books in the atheist category, 21 of them were written by men. So guys like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, these guys are really the leading voices. There are not a whole lot of prominent female atheists in America today. So the atheist group is very male dominated, but the agnostics are a little bit less, 55-45. Nothing in particular, are about 50-50, so really evenly divided. But in terms of race, we know that Asian Americans are the most likely to say they have no religious affiliation. About 40% of Asians today say they're atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular. White respondents are behind that, about 33%. And then African Americans are 30%. And Hispanics are just slightly below that, around 28%. So Asians are the most likely to be nuns, and then Hispanics are the least likely to be nuns, and everybody else sort of falls in between those two poles.
What are the political implications if such a large group of the nuns are, as you said, politically disengaged as well as religiously disengaged?
Yeah, so that's really, to me, the primary question that I have for the political parties going forward is, how are you going to reach out to this nothing in particular group? I think it's pretty clear that atheists and agnostics are a deep blue voting bloc. They're going to vote for the Democrat, basically whoever it is. And that's been consistent over the last 4 or 5 election cycles. But the nothing in particular group is incredibly interesting because they're much more malleable, and they move across the political spectrum based on who the candidate is. They loved Obama in 2008. He got a huge share, about 70% of the vote. But then in 12, they sort of soured on him a little bit. He only got 62%. And then something fascinating happened in 2016, where Hillary Clinton actually got 1 point less than Donald Trump did amongst the nothing in particular group in 2016. Now, a lot of the vote in 2016 went to the third party. So that was part of the equation too. A lot of nothing in particular felt left out by the 2016 race. But then what's really notable is that in 2020, Joe Biden got back to that Obama level of support amongst the nothing in particulars, and Trump lost 15 points of support amongst this group. Now, they're a large group, like we talked about, 21% of the population, but the other issue is they don't turn out a ton. So I wonder how the parties are going to focus on getting this group to be politically active going forward, and how to sway them to their side of the political spectrum. Because if you look at all the religious groups in America today and how they vote from election to election, there's very little change over time. I mean, 1 or 2 points is actually a lot from 2016 to 2020, but then nothing in particular has moved over 10 points. So this is a group that's really fertile ground for political parties to target. It's just they're really hard to find and they're really hard to activate. That's really the questions going forward to me.
What does the future of the nuns look like, and how do you think it'll affect the American religious landscape?
Yeah, I do think they're going to continue to climb. We see evidence in the data that it's sort of slowing just a little bit amongst the youngest generation. So now we know that the millennials and Gen Z are around 41 or 42% unaffiliated. I do think we're going to sort of get to a point where 45% nuns is about the top end, according to the data that we have right now. So I do think they're going to continue to rise from 30% today to 45%, let's say, in 30 or 40 years as the older generations die off who are more religious and are being replaced by less religious people all the time. But I do think there's sort of a plateau there. We're going to hit this barrier. I don't see a future in America where, let's say, 55 or 60% of Americans are nuns. I just don't see any evidence of that in the data. I think that there's a strong band in America of, let's say, 20% evangelicals and 20% Catholics, and then another 10 or 15% of everyone else. We've seen growth in groups like Muslims, Mormons, Buddhists, Hindus, and all these other religious traditions. And you add those all together, you get to about 55% of Americans who will have some religious tradition, and then about 45% who will have no religious tradition.
Finally, I'm a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It's, as you probably know, a biblical, creedal, historical, sacramental, deeply liturgical church body. What advice would you give confessional Lutherans on how to reach out to nuns?
Yeah. So the thing I would focus on as in churches, I don't think are very good at this because they've been, you know, the Great Commission obviously is something that motivates a lot of evangelical traditions to go out and try to bring in new members. But I think we forget the fact that churches at the end of the day are social organizations, just like any other social organization. There just happens to be this religious component to it. And the nuns, many of them are disengaged. They're disaffected. They're unmoored from American society. They don't go to church. They don't have high levels of education. They don't have good jobs. They're not politically engaged or activated. So they're really sort of floating in social space. They don't really have anything that ties them to place or purpose or community. And churches used to be a very good place for people to build these bonds together, to feel like togetherness, like we're in this together. We're going to work on these things together. I think churches need to remember the fact that they're social organizations and maybe emphasize the social stuff a little bit more. Things like potlucks, things like barbecues, things like just get-togethers that don't have like a Bible study component, or we're going to have a little sermon here at the end, or I'm going to, you know, hand you a tract or something like that. Just let people come and hang out and enjoy community. And especially in a post-COVID world when we're all, I think, desperate to be social again, I think churches have an ideal location in their communities to be social and facilitate social events. And then maybe the believing comes after the belonging, right? Maybe they become a member of the church and they start believing things later. But I think leading with the believing thing might scare off a lot of folks. So really focus on the social part in the next year or two and see if you can get people to come back to the fold that way.
Dr. Ryan Burge is assistant professor of political science and graduate coordinator at Eastern Illinois University. He's author of the new book, The Nuns, Where They Came From, Who They Are, and Where They Are Going. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Burge, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be talking about an open letter to President Biden on the Equality Act, written by Mary Eberstadt and published in Newsweek, with Mary Eberstadt next.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Have you ever wished you could see Ad Crucem's products before buying them? Well, now you can. Ad Crucem has opened our brand new workshop in Littleton, Colorado. Come visit us and watch how we make our Christmas ornaments. Check out the quality and fabric of our church banners, or choose some greeting cards, posters, icons, or jewelry. Of course, if you can't make it to Colorado, we are still open online. For details or directions, visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Sent to serve. Across the nation, children are back in 1900 Lutheran schools serving students in early childhood through high school. Whether in person or through remote learning, students are thriving in programs of excellence in safe, caring Christian environments taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. That's lcms.org/schools.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor: Bethlehem Lutheran, Sylvan Grove, Kansas; Faith Lutheran Church and Preschool, Marinette, Wisconsin; Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon; Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer, Peekskill, New York; Mount Zion Lutheran, Castle Rock, Colorado; Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California; St. Athanasius Lutheran, Fairfax, Virginia; St. Paul Lutheran, Austin, Texas; Trinity Lutheran, Arapahoe, Nebraska; and Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.